So I have a question for you.
Yes.
Just like in my quarantine times, I've been, you know, getting, as someone who like low key listens to podcasts like almost 20 hours constantly. A day anyway.
Yeah.
I like somehow feel like I've been doing even more of that, but I just listening to some stuff and like consuming some media of that kind of like, I survived a la like stranded in the jungle plane crash kind of vibe.
Yeah.
And it got me thinking like a lot about like will to live because sometimes when I hear these stories, I'm like, I would never, like, I would never do what they're doing. Like, I would just lay down and die.
I would be
finished.
And
then sometimes I would, like, listen to it and I'd be like, yeah, I could totally do this. Like, I would fight through this and, like, what a crazy experience. Mm-hmm. And it just gets me being like, I don't know, in these, like, a la Tom Hanks Castaway situations, like,
I could not give myself a root canal or knock my tooth out, I'll tell you that. I have thought about that many times, like, dental issues.
That. When he pulls his, when he breaks his tooth, like whatever. Ooh, God, my skin.
That scene has worked its way into my stress dreams.
Yeah, I believe it. It's very stressful. I can't, after like the first time seeing that, like, and I think the movie Castaway is a great film. And my dad, it's one my dad has watched on repeat. So I've like seen parts of it many times. But when that part comes on, I'm like, KO, I'm like going to go get like a seltzer in another room or something. I'm like, it is not, I can't, Tom Hanks in the tooth, man.
It's not for me. But I think, would I do well in a situation like that? I think I would do okay at like, shelter, and I would struggle with fire unless I had like matches or a lighter. But I think the hardest thing would be, I don't know if I could really get food because I don't know if I could live off of like fruits and shit that I gathered. And I don't know if I like could kill an animal like successfully. I just feel like that wouldn't, I would like not want to and then like do it half-heartedly and like never be able to catch anything.
It's interesting because you're too like totally talking about like skill sets and like what would you be good at, and I'm with you in terms of like trying to like physically tend to myself. And then I think about, you hear those stories, you know, where like somebody, like there's a plane crash and like, you know, they have broken bones or like a bone sticking out.
Oh God.
And they like,
yeah.
I was listening to a story recently where the girl, there was like a woman who was in a plane crash and she, I mean, really a girl. She's very like a teenager. She had just like just graduated high school. She was on a plane with her mom. Like everyone else died, literally everyone, including her mom. So then the devastation of that.
Right.
But like the physical shit going on, we were at the point that there were like maggots in her arm and she like survives this whole thing because her arm is cut open so deep
in the plane crash
that you can like see the bone. And I thought to myself in stuff like that, like so much about the will to live when you're already like so fucked up. Because sometimes you hear stories like really dramatically about like something that happens terrible, like something terrible that happens to like a pregnant woman.
Yeah. And then the baby like wanting it to live and protect it.
Yes. Or like just somebody being like, you know, all I could think about was like getting back to my kids. So I really fought through this. And I'm like, I don't have children, but like I imagine that could be like, I could see that being like a really big motivator, but that's like an external motivator. Whereas like, I feel like the Castaway narrative and like this girl whose story I was listening to almost feel more like this like internal, like I just have to get through. Like it didn't seem like they were, well, maybe the Castaway story.
He was thinking about
was, like,
Helen
in love.
Hunt, but.
Yeah, he was thinking about Helen Hunt.
But they weren't like, he also had his own will to live, but I don't know. I have thought about that definitely before, especially when I like my brain spins out on potential like kidnapping scenarios. That's another kind of like I survive situation. And I do think that something probably like takes over when you like are frightened for your life, where like adrenaline and like whatever chemicals are going. I think that those like cuts and the maggots on your arms, like it's your new reality eventually and it matters less and you're just like still going.
Yeah. And in her defense, I feel like she was so concussed and stuff from the plane crash that like maybe she couldn't even comprehend all the way how terrible things were.
Yeah,
I don't know.
For sure.
That's my own projection. I'm like, girl was concussed to fuck and like also like really dehydrated and like had not food for like days and days. And I was like, so she was delirious. So like the stuff that was terrible probably seemed like chiller, but
or more horrible.
Like, Well, there's, I don't know. I feel like when you're at that level of exhaustion, it's like, can you even comprehend?
True.
But it just made me think a lot about, like, I don't know, does, like, your will, like, is will to live, like, intrinsic? Like, to you, like, your point, like, the fight or flight or flee, like, it's just, like, your body goes into action? Or is it, like, there are external things, like fucking Helen Hunt, that are keeping you wanting to live?
I think it's a mixture of our, like, ingrained kind of, like, animal brain nature combined with Helen Hunt.
Yeah. Man, Helen Hunt, keeping us all alive.
Keeping us alive.
All of us living for Helen Hunt. And on that note, welcome to Why Are You Like This?
Welcome.
And then I get, like, a little misty, and I'm like, should I be caring more about animals than, like, people? But it doesn't have to.
He licks all the beakers and flasks and tubes until he finds it.
No. Are you making this up?
I'm not. This is how it was discovered. Hands-on, in-the-field experience to hydrate youths.
Which I know you're like, great, Austin, so you're drinking that fake water again? This month in December, please stop douching your genitals.
Soul-searching to find their true self.
I mean, that is this podcast, so. It's something we can all enjoy together. Ugh, welcome to Why Are You Like This, the weekly podcast where we dissect some part of our culture, human behavior, pseudoscience, real science, how Helen Hunt gives us the will to live in order to determine why people are the way that they are. That is Jamie Ryan assessing her survival skills in Cincinnati.
And that's Austin Williams making me relive all of my dental trauma dreams in Chicago.
Fuck. Man, you know this about me too, though. Dental trauma is like...
it's up
my
there.
It's my largest, like, physical fear that isn't, like, an existential crisis. You know what I'm saying?
Uh-huh. And that's why I gave you dental experience as a choice on one of our Halloween episodes.
Oh, yeah, you did. It was, like, my worst haunted house choices, and one of them was dental experience.
Simulated dental experience.
Wow. I mean, honestly, truly nightmare fodder. I mean, it's just...
Unreal.
Yeah, we are still recording this in quarantine times. And on my pre-quarantine to-do list, I was like, man, I really need to go to the dentist.
Man, just for,
like,
a cleaning,
like, it's been too long. Yeah, it's same. I don't want to talk about it. And I was like, I really need to go. And I, like, part of me is, like, bummed because I was, like, about to go. Mm-hmm. And then I didn't because obviously.
But also relieved.
Relieved. I was like, it would be irresponsible to go to the dentist at this point.
Well, looks like it's for the good of the nation, for the world, really, that I not go to the dentist. You're a hero.
American hero. Just saving everybody from a good teeth cleaning. I tell you what.
I'll tell you what, though. It's going to be a lot of cavities and shit after this because people are not going to reschedule the appointments that would have been during this quarantine.
I feel like that's fair. I really do. It just depends on, I feel like, probably your level of dental hygiene, which is making me self-reflect in a way that I feel like I need to make some personal adjustments.
I feel stressed about my flossing habits, but that's for me to figure out in my own time. Yeah.
Is being flossy related to dental floss? I actually don't know.
Maybe fresh and clean. I really don't know. I made that up.
Okay.
All right. Well, so since we're not talking about flossing in any capacity, I don't think, what are we talking about?
Okay. Good day. Good morning. Good evening. General welcome. Yes. Yeah. General welcome. Today, I don't think you know the topic for real.
I don't.
Oh, I'm actually pretty excited about this one. We're going to be talking about child prodigies.
Oh, I don't know if you could also hear my stomach when I gasped, but it made a...
I hope your mic picked it up, though.
Sound. It was just right.
That's great.
Wow. Okay. Go ahead.
Well, I want to give you, like, just, like, a loose definition, because, like, what is a child prodigy? We got to start with a Wikipedia resource on this one. So, a child prodigy is defined in psychology research literature as a person under the age of 10... who produces meaningful output in some domain to the level of an adult expert.
Okay.
The term Wunderkind, from German Wunderkind,
Wunderkind.
Literally wonder child,
yep.
is sometimes used as a synonym for child prodigy, particularly in media accounts. And Wunderkind also is used to recognize those who achieve success and acclaim early in their adult careers. So people throw that term around.
Yeah, loosely.
But I am excited, truly, to bring to you one of my favorite ways that I lead us through a podcast.
A dramatic retelling?
I will be dramatically retelling a segment of 60 minutes, yes.
Excellent. Tick, tick, tick.
Tick, tick, tick. Okay. So the episode in question, the segment is from an episode in 2012. Mm-hmm. So
right when the world was ending.
You know, right when the world ended in 2012, we had to talk about child prodigies. We get that good intro where our host, which unfortunately at this time is not Anderson Cooper, it's an older guy whose name I don't remember, who I will from here on out be referring to as the journalist, the narrator, the voiceover, but like I don't actually,
yeah,
I didn't look
fine.
Up his name. I apologize. I can see his face though. He's one of the older dudes on 60 Minutes. You're welcome. Large nose though, into it.
That's enough credit.
But as we begin at any good 60 Minutes episode, it's like that person sitting in that like black room in front of those like two projection screens that have like some image that somehow is like related to something. And they're like giving you the intro.
But and like honestly, the old school version of clickbait mostly.
I just do want to salute 60 Minutes and that they've never changed the format and it still works. I'm like, yeah, say more. I'm ready. So in our intro, our narrator begins by saying, child prodigies have long been the source of great fascination. We wonder how so much talent and genius fits in such a young body.
How does it fit?
How does it fit? He says, you'll meet Jake, 13-year-old and math and science expert.
Okay.
He's confident he will someday challenge the established theories of physics.
Well, that's confident. I mean, I guess he said it's confident.
Yep, it was prefaced that way, so you're welcome. And then this is my favorite part that the narrator says in this. He goes, thanks to his brain. And I'm like, wait, what? And then he goes, the most remarkable organ that we understand the least. And I was like, you know what? Poignant.
Wow, so the brain, the ocean of the body?
Yes.
Because we also don't understand the ocean. Yeah.
There's some deep sea fish inside my brain that y'all have never seen before.
Me too, for sure. And they make me feel lonely.
For sure. So then he poses the question. He goes, what caused him to be this way? He was taking college courses by age 8. And doing paid scientific research. Paid scientific research by 12.
What? The child labor laws, though, you have to be 14, so... Maybe he lied.
Listen, this is what was reported. I am not here to question it.
Okay, yeah.
And then it goes, then it shows you the 60 Minutes logo and goes tick, 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 mm-hmm. tick, like, we'll mm-hmm. be right back. And I'm like, oh, clickbait. Then you go to commercial. God, 60 Minutes, doing it again. So, back from commercials. They quick shoot to Jake at 13 in a science fair. He is wearing a suit and explaining, like, complicated shit to adults.
Mm-hmm.
He also is like offering cards in his resume to folks, which I'm like, do you, son?
All right.
And the narrator calls attention to Jake's untied shoes and says, like, is this like reminiscent of a teenager or is it reminiscent of the absent-minded professor? And part of me is like, I mean, come on.
Just both.
Probably both. But they, you know, just call attention to the fact that the researchers around him in this setting are essentially twice his age.
Mm-hmm.
Narrator still going says that every math problem or number he hears, he remembers. For me, this feels kind of reminiscent to Super Memory, which is another episode of this podcast where I retell an episode of 60 Minutes. So you're welcome.
It is.
But we will get into some of the things that memory is going to be like play a big part here.
Mm-hmm.
But I think what's interesting is how they distinguish some of this child prodigy stuff from memory and where the overlap is and how memory actually is like very wrapped up in it. So
right, but that it's not all of it. This kid also reminds me of Malcolm in the Middle.
Oh yeah. And we're gonna talk some about like the trope of child prodigies.
Yeah, yeah.
And different versions of that. And Malcolm in the Middle is a great example we should absolutely come back to because part of Malcolm in the Middle's MO is that he talks like an adult.
Mm-hmm. You're right. You're right.
And that is a reoccurring trope in like film and television and literature, like the kid who speaks beyond their years.
Right.
So quickly we shoot to our narrator talking to Jake in that black room where they sit on chairs and do what 60 Minutes does best. Yeah. And then they pan back and forth to the interview and live action and then a random interview. And then you're interviewing other people you haven't seen yet. Man, they really nailed this format. Mm-hmm. Okay. And so our journalist here asks if Jacob gets a kick out of doing it all. And he just like so eagerly saying yes and nodding in a way to me, like really feels like a kid.
Oh, yeah.
Which was nice because part of me is I'm like, is this kid going to just seem like really disconnected? But I was like, no, like this seems youthful. This thing that he just did, the mannerism. So.
Well, and he couldn't be like emotionally beyond his years. So I feel like he would respond like a child.
I think that's fair and something we should continue to talk about. So in this interview setting, the narrator, journalist, gent basically has him recite an absurd amount of pi. Mm. And Jacob can also do it backwards. Ugh. And apparently he learned 200 digits of pi in an afternoon and he did it to test himself.
Oh, wow. Jesus Christ. Yeah. Speaking of testing yourself real quick, I claimed last night that I could list out everyone in my graduating class, first and last name, from memory. So that's something I'm going to be trying to do in the next few days. We'll see.
I'll say this, and you graduated with a very...
It was not that big. It was like 130 people.
I was going to say, and I graduated with like 175. And I know that I couldn't name all of them from memory. But I do know I could name everyone's first and last name if you showed me a picture of them.
Oh, and, yeah, I think I could do that.
Like, no problem. And I feel like I could probably, I'm going to go out and make a wild claim. I think I could tell you where 80% of them went to college.
Wow. I could not do that, but we went to different schools.
You know, yeah. Listen. Anyway, so as the narrator, our journalist friend, tells us, Jacob's not just reciting shit like a parrot. He can visualize and solve complex problems by using what he calls the fourth dimension.
Oh. Dun, 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 dun. Is that like where he visualizes like the math and things?
So when asked what the fourth dimension is, Jacob says he could explain it if he had a whiteboard in like 30 minutes. And then with humor that I appreciated, he goes, it takes a while to describe. He goes, it's the fourth dimension. What did you expect?
Smug little. Well, yeah, I don't know. I haven't seen
it. Was likable.
All
it
right.
Was
likeable. There we go. That's good. That's good. A likable genius.
Well, and he said it's hard. He goes, you know, in that moment, he goes, it's hard to explain. It would take a while because they're like tangential to like all the other dimensions. He goes, I could do it if I had like more time and a whiteboard, but like, duh. Mm-hmm. It's
I'd like to see his explanation. Yeah.
I actually was like, I would watch that Help YouTube video. I didn't look for it. Mind. Maybe it exists.
Maybe it
we
does.
We can't know.
I'll look later.
We can't know. All right. We'll Google that. So our journalist friend then voices over numbers appear to him as shapes. Oh. And he says, just build on one another. And then they show Jacob like moving these kind of like colored laminates over each other, making these shapes over each other, and then kind of explaining what the number is that he just made. And yes,
whoa,
the first number he shows is 27, which I know
of
you
course
would love.
We needed I needed to know that. Thank you. Thank you.
I know you did. My numerologist.
Thank you.
And like what he's doing to me, the viewer, almost feels like how I imagine like synesthesia would be.
Mm-hmm. I was thinking
so, like,
that as well.
So like synesthesia, the refresher is, it's when people can like see colors and stuff with sounds. A lot of great musicians claim to have it or are touted to have it. Mm-hmm. My favorite being Pharrell. But, it's like almost like he can see math, which
yes
also I feel like feels like very much like how A Beautiful Mind is depicted with Russell
yeah
Crowe. So.
Yeah, and he can see it in that fourth dimension. I feel honestly very, very impressed. Like, yes, of course, by his like mathematical abilities, but like his ability to explain what's happening inside of his head to people who do not think that way at this age feels like a level of kind of like objective self-awareness to your thinking process that is like blowing my mind a little bit.
Oh, it's cool. And we're actually going to get to that because it actually becomes like apparent that like even in this genius, he like cares about other people understanding things too, not just like him solving all of it. So more on that to come. But they then, like, show him, like, writing on, like, a paneled window with a dry erase marker. And the narrator dramatically tells you that, like, when he runs out of wall space, he moves to the window.
Oh, my God. Oh my God.
Bless you, 60 Minutes.
Yeah, just a manic 10-year-old solving problems.
I mean, just a manic 10-year-old solving problems. Hmm. So our narrator asks him about remembering everything. He says, does that ever become a burden to you? And Jacob says, no, not at all. And again, the journalist kind of presses further. He goes, it never like runs over or becomes too much. And Jacob says, I remember math and numbers. I don't really remember other things. If someone asks me where something is in the house, I say I don't know.
Interesting. Huh.
Shoot to his family eating dinner.
Okay.
And the narrator tells us, Jacob is the oldest of five and lives with his family in the suburbs of Indianapolis. Oh. What up, Midwest? Mm-hmm. Okay. And then they pivot to Jacob giving us basically like a tour of periodic tables and like scientific gizmos in his room. Mm-hmm. And our narrator clues us in that he used the money he made at his summer research project to turn his room into a science lab.
Well, that's $3,200. Unbelievable. It is his money to spend.
100%. He earned it. And when... Listen, I mean, he's 13. It's crazy.
Yeah.
Can you imagine having $3,200 from a summer project at 13?
I cannot. No.
I mean, when I was 13, I felt like I was flossing when I had like $80.
Yeah, like what did I make money doing at 13? I guess like you're
babysitting?
You're barely old enough to babysit, but yeah. I probably did. And then like my grandma paid me to pull weeds, but she paid me a penny a weed. And then...
Oh, God.
Honor system on how many, but like... I'll tell you that like 6,000 weeds approximately fills like a small trash bag.
Apparently, yeah. Okay.
Yeah, $60. Right. Well, anyway, damn. That's how I made my money since I am not a mathematical genius with a transparency brain.
I mean, we can't. So in this bedroom tour, he, you know, points out Saturn. He says it's his favorite planet, not for its rings, but actually for stuff to do with its moons.
And its moons are dope. There's one that I almost said methadone as like liquid because it's so cold there. So like, it's not a gas, it's a liquid and it looks like Earth, but like instead of H2O, like as the oceans, it's just liquid methadone. So like there could theoretically be like a whole ecosystem that develops there similar to Earth, but the creatures would be methadone based instead of like water and carbon based.
Look at you with the science lesson.
I think it's called
it.
Titan. Anyway.
I feel like you're into this because it proves, like, potentially aliens.
I think it's arrogant to think we're fully alone forever here.
I'm with that. I'm with that vibe.
Yeah.
So, as long as Jacob can remember, he has been fascinated by space. When they say that, again, I'm like, that feels age-appropriate. Kids love space.
Yeah, for sure.
That feels good. Like space and dinosaurs feel like a big thing for the youths that I like.
Maybe a little marine biology, but mostly space and dinosaurs.
Oh, yeah. Marine biology is another good one. Our journalist friend asks if Jacob has any ambition to be an astronaut. And he quickly goes, no.
Oh,
that's
too
dangerous.
He's too smart for that. Exactly.
And he says, if anyone, I'll be the guy controlling the astronauts. And then this is also kind of cute, though, because I didn't take it as like a slight. I took it as like a testament of like maybe this he considers this person braver. He goes, if anybody's going to be an astronaut, it's my brother.
Oh, he probably does think he's braver. Maybe he's a little dumb, but like does like really crazy bike jumps. We don't know.
We can't know. So then they quickly shoot to Jacob playing what I assume is Guitar Hero based on. I mean,
amazing.
I can't know that it's. The brand
a Guitar Hero style game.
Yeah, and he's with two other kids who seem to be his brothers, but they don't like call that out. And honestly, he looks really good at Guitar Hero. Like at some point he's playing the guitar controller like in front of him, and then another point he's got it behind his head and he's still playing and he's not messing up, and I'm like impressed.
Well,
by that.
Okay, the way that like the lights come toward you and like the colors each correspond with like a key that you play sounds kind of like the display of his brain that he did for those adults when he was explaining how he solves math problems. I don't know. So
and
maybe the format
music is math.
Exactly.
Music is math.
Yeah. So he's crushing it at Rock Band and all that.
Rock Band. That's the other one. Thank you.
Of course.
And so then we get our great narrator with drama goes, all work and little play does not make Jake a dull boy.
Ooh,
and I'm like, okay.
Tick, tick. All right.
tick, tick, 60 minutes. Okay. So they shoot to the interview where the narrator says, like, what do you do for fun? And Jake says, when it isn't anything academic? And the narrator says, yeah, like beyond academics. And then Jake goes, does looking up space articles online count? And then they laugh. Cut away to a narration where they say he has a full scholarship at what I affectionately call IUPUI, I-U-P-U-I. It's like the Indiana, yeah, that's what people affectionately call it, but it's Indiana University, Purdue University, Indianapolis. That's what the acronym is, I-U-P-U-I, IUPUI, okay. If all you will. Right.
Sure.
But that's maybe a derogatory thing people who went to undergrad at Indiana said. Who's to say? But he is an honor student there in math and physics.
Oh.
And they shoot to him 13? Standing. Yes, he's 13. Yeah.
Okay.
And they shoot to him standing with like three other college dudes. Aww. And then the narrator points out, he goes, he may not be the tallest student, but he surely is among the brightest. And I'm like, okay, people.
I wonder how that goes for him socially.
Well, we'll see a little bit of that. They state that he usually gets the highest grades in the class. Mm. No surprise. Mm-hmm. And they show him in a lecture surrounded by like all the, you know, young 20-somethings asking questions. And our narrator tells us, Jake has been auditing classes here since he was 8.
Whoa.
When it became obvious, third grade was not going to be enough.
Clearly.
And the narrator asks him, he says, what do fellow students think of you? Mm. And Jake says, everyone thought my mom was taking the class and she couldn't find a babysitter.
Oh, that's really funny.
Shit to his parents for the first time with the interviewer.
Mm-hmm.
The narrator says, his parents thought he would sit quietly, listen, and learn, but even they were shocked when he jumped into scientific discussions.
Oh, he's just in there, going for it.
Going for it. His mom goes on to say, the professor was asking questions and Jake was answering them.
Hmm.
He took the final at the end and got an A. And suddenly, the people at the university took notice and invited him to attend the school.
Wow.
Back to the interview with Jake. Our journalist friend asks, he says, pretty shocking when an 8-year-old aces a college astronomy test. And I just want to say as an aside, as someone who took one astronomy class in college, fuck.
I took one day of one astronomy class, and then I decided that that had to be the class that I would drop. Despite wanting to know the information, I could not have passed the tests.
It is a hard physics topic.
Yeah,
anyway,
it's tough.
So our friend says to Jake, he goes, were you impressed? And Jake kind of matter-of-factly goes, I mean, I guess I was. He goes, I was just doing what I like to do.
Yeah, he doesn't even see it as anything really but extracurricular, obviously.
It's just who he is.
It's just what he wants to be doing, yeah.
Shoot to some baby pictures with some light narration.
Sure.
No one could have predicted he would make it to college.
What?
Just before his second birthday, he began to regress, stop speaking, and even making eye contact.
Interesting. And maybe his math brain was kicking up and it was overwhelming and he couldn't then just... Yeah, go ahead.
Well, the diagnosis was autism.
Oh.
And his mom said he was going further and further from our world into his own world. And I was just baffled at how we would get him back out of that world.
Mm.
And the narrator said, and how did you? And his mom said, we realized Jacob was not happy unless he was doing something he loved. Mm. And part of me was like, what a fucking privilege.
Yeah.
Like, what if I could just only do things I loved?
Yep.
But I do kind of feel like that's like being a kid on some level. Like, you do have to do some shit you don't want to, but you really get the opportunity to, like, throw yourself into things that are fun and that you enjoy.
Yeah, 1,000%.
In a way that maybe we don't always feel like we can as adults. So there's something to that.
No, we can't do, like, soccer and dance and art classes.
Right. You pick the one you like.
Right.
So, our narrator goes, which even as a 3-year-old was math and science.
Unreal.
The more he focused on subjects he loved, the more he began to communicate.
Wow.
His mom says, you would see him just relax. Like, thank goodness we're not working on something I can't do today. And the narrator asks,
I feel that way often.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
And the narrator asks, how long did it take for him to get where he is today? And his dad chimes in and says, by kindergarten, he was still behind in terms of speaking and socializing with others, but he was also light years ahead and would come home and ask when he was going to learn something at school, saying, I want to learn algebra.
Oh, well, that's just not going to happen.
then we get a great narration saying, trying to keep challenged led to somewhat of a double life. Elementary school by day, sitting in on college courses in the evening. By fifth grade, he had dropped out of public school. And just to demonstrate he was ready for college, he taught himself all of high school math in just 2 weeks.
Unreal.
He was 10.
Unreal.
Back to his parents. His mom said, it's the most determined thing I've seen anybody do. He had to sit in on a calculus class to prove to the university he could sit still. He wanted to participate in the discussion and thought, well, if I need to learn Algebra 1, Algebra 2, and trig, that's what I'll do. Mm. His dad says he taught himself in 2 weeks.
That's so crazy.
Narrator goes, not only that, but he taught himself the entire state of Indiana curriculum for 6th through 12th grade in a little over a year.
Whoa. And then he's also catching up emotionally if he's able to be comfortable speaking to professors and like other people in these college classes. So like, despite the regression and like, I don't know that he's for sure like up to speed with other 13-year-olds socially, but he's obviously like bounced back really hard. And so I don't know. I almost want to be like, what like part of his brain is missing for like this part to be like so hyper functioning, but like maybe something doesn't have to be missing. But
perfect. We're taking you exactly where you want to go next on this episode.
Oh, amazing. I'm sorry.
His parents had started a center for autistic kids called Jacob's Place, say that many of his symptoms of autism have disappeared.
Oh,
so his dad says that there's still some, if you really look for them, that they're there. But otherwise, it's just a 10-year-old kid doing next level work. And that really looks like the only difference.
Wow.
We pivot back to Jake in an interview. And the journalist asks, your parents told us you're really proud of your autism. And Jake says, yeah, that's the reason I believe I'm in college and so successful.
Mm.
It's the rise of why I love math and science and astronomy. It's the reason I care. Otherwise, I don't think I would have gotten this far.
Wow.
And I want to say, like, I think sometimes when kids, like, are painted as, like, big genius, you maybe, like, look almost for, like, autism or some sort of, like,
brain
inept social
injury, like those people that, like, get hit on the head and then they can play the piano.
Yeah, but I mean, just, like, watching this, like, I almost feel like, am I looking for, like, autistic characteristics?
Right, and then confirmation bias.
Right, but I honestly feel like the things that probably seems, like, goofy or sweet about him are just, like, he's just 13.
He's just
like,
a kid.
Just, like,
he's
a kid. But it's almost hard to wrap your mind around the things that he does that are, like, kid-like, mm-hmm. because then he's also speaking in this way that's very adult.
Right. Oh, wow.
So then we shoot to three researchers and our journalist saying, Joanne Ruth, a professor of psychology at Ohio State University, has been studying child prodigies for the last 13 years.
Oh, all right.
And I just want to say, I love all these wild fields of study that
that's what
like,
I was
we
just
don't know
thinking.
About.
Yeah.
So she believes there is a link between autism and prodigies. Shoot to Joanne. She goes, we know that child prodigies are having autistic relatives at a very high rate, and some of them have autism themselves. She believes what sets a prodigy apart from other kids with the condition is that the prodigy's genes have been modified so that the genius emerges without many of the symptoms associated with autism.
Mm-hmm.
Whoa. Joanne says in the general population of autism, 10% will have some sort of like savant level skill and only have that part of itself showing.
Wow.
They all share this incredible memory, each and every one of them. Our journalist friend asks, what's remarkable about Jake is not just his memory, but how adult his vocabulary is. And Joanne says, well, of course. She goes, they often speak like adults because they picked up so much info so early in their life and just continue to do so.
Oh, extra absorbent little sponges. Okay.
She says that talent like Jake's is about 1 in 10 million.
Wow. I mean, yeah, I've literally never heard of that. So, yeah.
Right. And she's tested him and he literally aces like every intelligence and memory test.
Of course. Yeah.
And goes on to say in this interview, she goes, imagine if you could remember every new word or thing you learned and then integrate it and come up with new ideas. That's what he's doing.
So how old is this guy now? Because this isn't like Elon Musk as a child, right?
No, his name's Jake. This is not Elon Musk.
Okay.
So shoot to Joanne and Jake with a map and a pointer, a map of the United States, right? Mm-hmm. She's reading him state names in a random ass order as she points to them. She names 28 of them. Mm-hmm. Jake can repeat them forwards and backwards in sequence, no problem.
Wow.
The interviewer then, you know, shoots to he and Jake in a room, says if he still remembers those, it's 3 months later. And of course he does, in the same order.
Jesus Christ. Most reliable witness ever. He could be an eyewitness. I mean,
honestly. Shoot to Jake and Professor at a whiteboard. And our great narrator giving us a little bit of drama. Mm-hmm. While some may dismiss his talent as simply remarkable memory. Mm. And I'm like, yes, please help me make the distinction. Mm-hmm. His physics professor says he is much more than a human calculator. Mm. Our journalist friend asks the professor, is Jake just a great memory or is it something else? Mm-hmm. And the professor says, definitely something else. Great memory does help him, of course, because once he reads something, he remembers it. But more importantly, he has the drive to learn more and stands out as a powerhouse of raw talent.
And he's able to integrate all of that. Like, if you suddenly, like, could just, like, basically read the dictionary and then, like, be able to use all of those words and come up with, like, new phrases from them, that's totally different than just remembering.
100%. Absolutely. And his professor that we're, you know, being seen with here oversaw his research project, and the work was published in some journal called Physical Review A, which apparently is a very prestigious physics journal, and he's the youngest person.
All right.
Yeah, I listen, physics, yo. But he was the youngest person to be published in it. Go figure.
Good for him.
Then we shoot to Jake in the college dining hall with a group of students / friends.
Who are his friends?
Our narrator tells us that he plans to continue his research, building on Einstein's theory of relativity.
Of course.
And his parents say that he takes on these challenges with grace. Shoot back to the parents. His dad goes on to say, he has a tight-knit group of friends that he hangs out and studies with. He leads study groups. And then his dad, in some way that almost feels like kind of like weird pride, and I hate that it was gendered, but whatever.
Sure.
He goes, I have college-age girls calling the house, asking if Jake is available to study during finals. And when I go to campus with him, it's like I'm walking around with Elvis.
That's weird. We just let him.
Yeah.
It's already troubling for him to be like, he's going to go through puberty when he's in college around other people, and that's going to be hard. You know, we just chill out about it.
Chill out about it. Right. So our narrator then is shot outside, like on campus with Jake. And he says that so far the king seems to keep his celeb status in check. And we see them talking. And Jake says, practically everyone knows who I am. And our journalist friend says, so are you like a star on this campus? And Jake like goes, oh, big man on campus. And then like laughs.
Well, that's cute.
Like, in this very just, like, jovial, like, haha, like, what is this archetype kind of way.
Yeah, but exactly.
We get the narrator again, and they shoot to him, you know, standing with a couple other dudes. Mm-hmm. And he goes, but the little big man says he enjoys nothing more than using his talent to help fellow classmates see the beauty he sees in the numbers. And they're showing him, like, answering a question for another student. And the dude's like, hey, thanks. Like, da da da. And it seems, like, very normal.
Yeah.
Like, it seems like things that happened after class when I was in college.
Mm-hmm. Well, good for him. That's amazing. And maybe, honestly, it's easier for him to talk to, like, people who are basically adults than his peers.
Sure. And Jake then says, I kind of want to use that to end the whole math phobia thing. And the narrator says, because so many people like me and like millions of others are scared of math and science. And Jake just like says yes, but is laughing really hard. And our journalist friend says, why is that funny? Like, you almost can't understand why anyone could be. And he goes, yeah, exactly.
Oh, yeah.
So to wrap up, as they do on 60 Minutes, back in that black room where our journalist friend is sitting in front of two screens.
Yes.
Tick, tick, tick. Jake is writing a book to help us overcome our fear of math.
Oh.
And he's on track to graduate at age 14 when he hopes to begin his PhD studies.
Wow. All right. Doogie Howser.
Now, I have to give you a sidebar.
Mm-hmm.
Because it is salacious, and I know you'll care, and our listener friends will also probably care.
I can't even think of what this would be.
But we can't derail here for forever. That's okay. All I'm saying. Okay. But I have to tell you this. Mm-hmm. Okay. So his mom... Oh, so Jake is 22 now.
Okay.
But his mom is Christine Barnett, and that's the woman who's at the center of the adoption scandal. Yes. So the center of the adoption scandal with her husband, Michael, where she claimed that, like, the 9-year-old Ukrainian daughter that they adopted, Natalia, is actually 22, but Natalia says she's not, and nobody's really sure because some doctors are saying she's not definitely not 9, but some people are saying she's older, so...
Wow. I knew...
Same family.
I knew when I read about Natalia that she had some kind of a situation where, like, her adoptive parents also had, like, a prodigy child, but I didn't know it was like this. Wow.
And I will tell you, when I was watching this episode of 60 Minutes and very intrigued about it, No, actually. And I saw, like, his parents and they're talking and I, like, was like, oh, this is really, like, normal, nice family, etc. And I didn't realize that it was the same family until I was like, how old is Jacob now? And, like, pulled up Wikipedia.
Oh, and then all that other shit was attached to it.
And then I was like, oh, Christine Barnett. I was like, oh, Natalia. Oh, adoption scandal. I was like, wow, wow, wow. I was like, this was, I didn't realize that watching this. No. So.
I hope later someday Natalia writes a tell-all.
I'm very curious. I really kind of feel like she's, like, maybe 22, but I don't know.
It feels bad to say that, but it's, like, kind of my gut says that, and that's all I'll say. Right. That's all I'll say, yeah.
That's all I'll say. If you want to do more looking into that, we talked about it on
an episode. We did. I have no idea what episode. It might have been a cold open. Oh, yeah, no, it wasn't.
It wasn't. It was an episode you led.
Yeah,
I don't
fully
know.
It was, but I don't know what.
We talked about it. Also, like, Natalia appears on Dr. Phil and all sorts of shit. She sure it's out does. There. So
yeah.
Do your Googling. Adoption scandal, Natalia, Indianapolis. You'll find.
Mm-hmm. She's from the Ukraine. Yeah, go ahead.
But so that's our 60 Minutes, Juju. And I really enjoyed, like, following the story and, like, getting the way they presented the information about him. I thought was really interesting about, like, how we got, like, one vantage point. And then we talked about the autism. But then we saw how, like, it didn't seem to, he wasn't socially struggling. It
right.
Didn't seem.
Right. And that maybe he would have struggled socially more if he had not engaged in his interests really hard and, like, allowed his brain to be there. Is totally. Really interesting that was, and we don't have proof, but that maybe this suggests that was a solution.
100%. And I was like, this is so, like, honestly, endlessly fascinating, like, child prodigies. And it got me thinking about that trope of, like, child prodigies and, like, why are we so interested in them specifically and how they appear in, like, TV and movies all the time. Like, you already mentioned Malcolm in the Middle, that vibe early on. And I think there's a lot of stuff here with, like, endless, like, I mean, we're endlessly fascinated with them because I think it poses the question of, like, are they born or are they made, this nature versus nurture question for sure. I think we also have emotional feelings about, like, should we envy this brilliance or should we pity them? Because it's, like, so complicated to be, like, a kid and that smart. And then kind of the where are they now? What happens when they become adults question?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
And so, honestly, like I said, it's all over movies and TV and books. Like, quick ones that I'm going to mention more, but that I just want to throw out from the beginning to get everybody's gears turning. And we mentioned Malcolm in the Middle. And chime in if you have some other ones, but I want to throw out Matilda, The Royal Tenenbaums. Mm-hmm. I want to talk about Doogie Howser. I want to talk about Lisa Simpson.
Right.
Lisa Simpson
and
is
Martin
a child
Prince.
Prodigy. Yeah. I mean, listen. Come on. And then we meet some of these kind of prodigies, like, a little bit older than, like, right at childhood. So, like, Good Will Hunting, Matt Damon's character.
Honestly, like, also, if Rory you've ever seen... from Gilmore Girls.
Oh, that is a good one who would fit into this archetype. And I'm going to break it down into some different versions. And maybe we can kind of talk about where some of these people fit in. Mm-hmm. She is another one you meet, like, a little bit older. And so is, have you ever seen the movie Finding Forrester?
Oh, no, I have not.
It's a great movie. It has the lead male actor. I don't remember his name, but from Save the Last Dance. But he's so good in this movie.
Oh, yeah,
it's a
yeah,
drama.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. All right.
But, yeah, I'm a fan of that. And he's kind of like the protege of someone else who's, like, brilliant. Mm-hmm. So, mm-hmm. Why are we so into all of these, you know, child prodigy types?
Almost like, you know, in the way that we're into, like, superheroes. There's obviously, like, a spectacle element to anyone that's kind of like labeled genius. I think it's like we're attracted to people with like super like speed or strength or mental abilities.
Totally. And I love that you mentioned superheroes, because I want to call out kind of a difference here between like our child genius prodigy types and our older genius. So if we look at stuff like Doctor Strange or like Tony Stark, whatever. Iron Man. I don't know why I call him Anthony Stark. Anthony Stark. I like full named him. Anyway, Iron Man, shout out to you. They're not the same as, like, the real-life genius movies that were, like, you know, Imitation Game or anything about Stephen Hawking or, like, mm-hmm. Mozart.
Beautiful so Mind, as you mentioned.
Yeah, Beautiful Mind, totally. But the adult kind of tropes of, like our Iron Man and Doctor Strange are not about trying to understand genius usually, but mostly applying it to pursuits of solving or fighting crime. Sherlock Holmes would be another good example.
Absolutely. A lot of Robert Downey Jr. in there.
A lot of Robert Downey, and honestly, shout out to him. It's funny when I was doing some research on this, and mentions of there are specific actors who play that kind of, like, crime-fighty, like, older mm-hmm. genius. Robert Downey Jr. is one. Benedict Cumberbatch is one who, Christian like, plays Bale. That role a lot.
Yep.
Yeah, Christian Bale. Totally. So, it's different, but when we look at the younger kids instead of, like, these older geniuses, and we're really considering where genius, I feel like, comes from mm-hmm. and how it's formed. So truly that nature versus nurture question, which we don't always really ask when we're introduced to, like, the older genius, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it also has us back to reviewing kind of this incredible memory, because in pop culture, they're all, like, these child prodigies are also often depicted as just, like, born this way.
Yeah.
Oftentimes, like, in spite of their upbringing, in spite of Matilda being a really good example.
Mm.
Which is, like, a Roald Dahl book, but then, like, written in the 80s, and then we make it into the movie in the 90s. I think, like, mid-90s, movie comes out. But one thing I learned while researching this that I found kind of fascinating is actually one kind of child prodigy in fiction that is brought up a bunch and seems to be the root for a lot of other ones is a famous family known as the Glass family, or the Glass siblings,
unfamiliar.
Which is via J.D. Salinger.
Oh, okay.
And these guys are depicted in a very, like, complicated light and are, like, true, like, totally, like, born this way savants. But a lot of the story of, like, the Glass family, people credit to inspiring Wes Anderson's The Royal Tenenbaums and also Paul Thomas Anderson's Magnolia, which is another movie. If you're not as familiar with it, it's basically about like a genius kid who is on like basically like a Whiz Kids game show.
Oh.
And like he has like the stereotypical dad who's like stage father, like really like angry and mean and trying to push him to be brilliant. And you also in that movie see, like, the adult version of someone else who was one of these Whiz Kids and, like, where he is now in that film. Mm-hmm. And it gives you a very complicated picture. But the 80s and 90s, we really start to get this version of kids.
Yeah,
in
we really did.
And TVs.
And Malcolm in the Middle was a late 90s production as well. And he had kind of honestly, I feel like he had good parents, but his home life was sometimes complicated.
Well, and I want to talk more about the Malcolm in the Middle archetype, but I think it's just an interesting shift to call out, because in the 80s and the 90s, kind of before these like child prodigy depictions, mm-hmm. we were seeing a bunch of like scrappy adventure kid narratives.
Oh,
so, like,
Goonies
the kids
and
in
shit.
E.T., they were not like brilliant. Mm-hmm. Like, they were just like scrappy. You said Goonies. That's a great one.
Heavyweight. Little Rascals. Little Rascals, yeah.
just like these scrappy kids, like having adventures.
Being scouts. Yeah.
Yeah, totally. But it wasn't brilliant.
No.
And then we get the brilliant shift of things that come 80s and 90s, like Matilda, like Doogie Howser,
mm-hmm.
Like Ender's Game, which was a book and then adapted to the movies. And then obviously I said Lisa from The Simpsons.
Right.
And then there was another movie that I hadn't seen before, but Little Man Tate.
I've never heard of that.
It was directed by Jodie Foster,
oh.
which is cool. And it's the first movie that she directed. And it's about, like, she plays, I think, the mom of this, like, childhood savant. But people thought it was interesting that that was the first movie she directed because she was always kind of considered, like, a child mm-hmm. savant actress.
Exactly.
So
wise beyond her years.
Right. And then we get Good Will Hunting, which is, like, the angry young man version of a child prodigy.
Oh, yeah. Lots of angst.
Oh, for sure. But I thought it was cool because there were a bunch of kind of different archetypes within this child prodigy, like, trope.
Bag.
And some of them,
yeah, trope.
Well, it's not all the way, not everything that maybe seems like a child prodigy is, mm-hmm. I guess, when you break it down. So I'm going to juxtapose some of those.
Sure.
So one version is the child prodigy versus the, quote, chosen one.
Mm.
So the chosen one narrative, Harry Potter is, like, obvious.
Right.
But also, Sword in the Stone.
Oh, yeah. 'Tis a gentle hand that will rule the land.
Frodo from Lord of the Rings.
Yep. Mm.
And they do call out, I think, and it's worth mentioning just in research that I did, that most of the Chosen One kind of archetypes are men, but sometimes women shout out Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
Oh, Joan of Arc. But, I mean, that's more historical.
That's historical. But kind of the mindset of these, like, Chosen One figures is that they're, like, these normal, humble people, but they have, like, hidden talents, or they have some sort of, like, meaningful lineage that they have to grow into.
Right. And I think that that makes them, like, at least in literature, it makes them, like, identifiable for the reader, like, as a main character. It helps people, I think, like, insert themselves or their emotions into that role because it feels more relatable.
Yeah, or even in a fantastical way. Like, I know that I'm not a savant, but I could imagine, I don't imagine becoming like I was always brilliant, but I can't imagine being like, what if I unlocked something special about myself that I didn't know?
I do think about that, yeah.
Yeah, I think a lot of us do. I think that's why we love those kind of stories. And prodigies, in juxtaposition to this, like, finding themselves kind of narrative, mm-hmm. are, in pop culture, like, they're not growing into it. They're already there.
No, yeah,
like, they just already have all these gifts.
Yeah.
And there was one example that I liked that was a good example of kind of a hybrid of being a child prodigy and of being a chosen one.
Mm-hmm.
Luke Skywalker.
Oh, you're right.
He's like, he's like born a slave, but like overcomes it. But then also he's got all these, like, he is like the shit with the Force and like all this stuff that's like savant level shit mm-hmm. that like he just has.
Right.
But there's some of this like growing into it and like overcoming like
Absolutely.
Weird circumstances and finding your lineage. So he's a kind of a fun like prodigy and chosen one wrapped up into one.
He is, unlike his dad who was just prodigy, really.
Totally. And then another kind of version of this, and this is where I think Malcolm in the Middle falls into, mm. and in some ways, Lisa Simpson, I feel like, falls
they
maybe...
They feel similar to me.
So she feels like maybe a hybrid version of this to me, but basically it's like the child prodigy versus, like, and this is kind of like, it can be a hokier thing and cannot always be done well,
sure.
but just like the child that talks like an adult.
Yeah, yeah.
Malcolm wasn't, like, super smart or anything. He just talked like he was an adult.
Yeah. Well, he was in that, like, Krelboin class, and he could, like, recite all the numbers and stuff. But the biggest marker, like, what cues us in as audience members for, I think, both Lisa Simpson and Malcolm are mm-hmm. the way that they talk, like, to adults and to us.
Yes. Totally.
And does Bart, I guess, like, Bart talks similar to Lisa, but he's older than her, but she definitely talks more like an adult than he does.
Definitely. And Bart has like his moments of like when he like wants to and when he doesn't. And I think Lisa, we even see like a very fun nature versus nurture question in different episodes of The Simpsons where she kind of even herself asks, like, you know, would I be even smarter than I am if it were nurtured more? There's like an episode where she meets like a girl who's like even more accomplished than she is. But her, that girl's parents are like professors. Yes. And like they're really brilliant. And she's very envious.
Yes. And then there's another episode where she feels like, how did I get smart? Like, but I also don't like relate to anyone in my family. I feel so isolated. And Homer felt bad for her because like, it's because he's dumb that she felt this way. And so he rounded up all of the Simpson relatives he could find who like were doctors or like artists or musicians or something that like she would identify with, and had them all come over. And so it was like a yard full of like all of the ones that were like Lisa for her to feel less alone.
That's very emotional.
It's very emotional.
Wow. Whew. That makes me, that's a gut punch. And, like, there's also, there's another one, too, where, like, sorry to ruin The Simpsons for you if you haven't seen all the great things, that Homer's actually brilliant, but it's that crown, crayon inside his brain.
Yeah.
Lisa, take this crayon and shove it into my brain. Like, shove it up my nose until it hits my brain.
I love you, Dad.
Oh, my God. God, that is a very dramatic episode.
It is.
But, yeah, so there's stuff there that also kind of makes us really question this and that. And I think just like kind of the trope of like also like the omniscient kid who's like explaining things to the adults of like how they are, like is the voice of reason in something happens a lot. And we see that with the kids who aren't necessarily savants, but just like call it like it is to the adults.
Or even, and this is a little different, but like the idea of indigo children, like in the early thousands, that there would be like all of these children born that were like had psychic abilities and were like way wise beyond their years.
Right. Totally.
It's weird.
And then kind of like the darker version of like a child prodigy kind of trope is like the bad seed narrative. And this plays on the ideas that we perhaps have, or, you know, the fears that a precocious child is like, quote, not quite right.
Oh, yeah.
And again, this is like the nature versus nurture question being like a main theme of like, are you born bad?
Is this Natalia? Maybe Christine just didn't want to admit she had another savant on her hands.
Well, we can't know. That's a
bad seed
question.
Go ahead.
Well, a lot of it, though, people like the bad seed narrative, we a lot of times is viewed as like being kind of a depiction of like folks' anxieties about parenthood. Sharp Objects on HBO is a good example.
Yeah.
The movie We Need to Talk About Kevin, which is very dark.
Yes, it is.
But the prodigy story, unlike kind of the bad seed narrative where it's like there's this evil kid, like you think about so many horror movies where it's like the kid who's like trying to kill his parents.
Yeah, like
in
the Omen or Orphan, shit like that.
Totally. But the prodigy story isn't really about parents. It's about projecting onto kids. It's we're more thinking about the narrative of like growing up and aging, whereas like the bad seed narrative, you feel more like you're in the vantage point of the parent.
You do, yes.
Whereas then when you see like a prodigy story, you're more like projecting onto the younger people.
Wow. I guess we don't project onto like evil because we don't want to don't think that we are that.
Sure. And there's a lot like wrapped up in that because like why do we project our like dreams and disillusionment onto these like genius kids?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. That's also a lot for them to deal with.
Totally. And in like fiction, I think oftentimes like the best child prodigy narratives illuminate both like childhood and adulthood.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so in some of this, like the genius being a child, one thing that you have that you don't have with adults is like this innocence.
Mm-hmm.
You know, these kids usually are just like trying to get really good at chess or something, but like the narrative is not they're not doing it for like extreme personal gain.
No,
or to, like,
they're not
get
like
one over
crushing Wall Street. They're just like the best chess player in America.
Right. And so that's like a very like innocent thing that we can like give to the kid narrative of that like the adult version doesn't have.
Right.
But then the kid narrative also has something that like the adult version doesn't quite have of sadness because it's this question of living up to like earlier promise.
Oof.
And how do we take like our childhood passions and move them into adulthood? And do they like matter in adulthood? Are they something that can be a part of our adult lives?
That makes me
go ahead.
I was just going to say that the idea of like living up to like your early, like perhaps shown potential just made me think of, I can't remember who told me this. It was a teacher in high school, but she was talking about how a lot of people our age were put into gifted classes in the 90s.
I think about this a lot. Let's talk about
it. Yeah. And I think that maybe some of this like savant like stuff in culture, in pop culture, maybe spilled into like school systems and like affected what parents wanted, because like gifted programs like exploded in the 90s. And it was based on like our early test scores as children. But this teacher in high school was telling me that like later findings were that when children are like in early elementary school, they're at such different stages of development from each other.
Yeah.
Like mentally, that like once they get older, like those kids that were pulled into like the quote, like gifted class, like are often like testing and performing like exactly the same or sometimes lower than the other kids who were not in that class. And so like living up to future potential, like that kind of sucks for all those kids that were like in the gifted classes, and maybe their parents were like, oh, like we're gonna have like a neuroscientist, and then they're just like a regular ass person, because that's fine. And that I think happened to probably a lot of people who are in our age bracket.
Totally. And I think about stuff with this that I feel like in school, like as a kiddo, because of stuff like that, I felt like a big part of like my identity as a youngster was quote unquote being smart.
And that happens like in Malcolm in the Middle. He doesn't want to go to the gifted class because he doesn't want to be like pushed into that social like label.
Totally. And it's complicated because I think even sometimes I catch it bleeding into like adult life in the way that I think I identify with that more still subconsciously in a way that I don't always realize I do, because sometimes if I say or do something and someone calls it out as being like a smart idea or like a really unique opinion or like thoughtful, I almost get a little offended because I'm like, what are you surprised? I am smart. Like, oh, does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. It does. It does.
And I think sometimes about like when I was in college, I had a lot of friends who were in the business school, and I minored in the business school and I majored in merchandising, like on the fashion end of things, in a different college. And I often felt talked down to by like certain groups of business majors, and was like super just some kind of way, like grappling with like, why am I like not, I'm not doing the thing that like apparently gives you like the smart identity at this stage in life. And that was very uncomfortable for me, because I think socially I had always kind of like grouped myself in like quote the smart group, for whatever that's worth, which honestly isn't, it's not really worth anything, but it does make you feel some kind of way.
It does. So, and I think that I had like a lot of like extra negative feelings like throughout childhood, high school, even college, about like how much I struggled with math. And it's funny because I don't really anymore, but I think that like being pulled into gifted classes, but then at the same time, like being like so behind everyone in like my mad minute tests, like everyone's doing division and I'm still doing subtraction. Like, but I'm also supposed to be like this gifted child. Like, this doesn't add up.
Yeah, and I think there's a lot of unfairness that, like, to, like, be bright, quote-unquote, you have to be, like, good at everything, which I also think is unfair.
Or really fast. I don't like those timed math tests. Like, you just get an anxiety wave and a full body sweat, and now the minute is over.
I think there have actually been studies, though, recently that that's, like, an ineffective way to teach kids math.
I heard that they don't do that anymore, yeah.
Yeah, if they're either not doing it or they're fading it out.
Walking it back.
I love this to your point about like earlier promise and like living up to shit and those gifted classes things, because I think a really good story version of that is the Royal Tenenbaums, because they're these extra special kids and they grow up to be normal ass adults. But then they feel like it's funny because it's like relatable in that capacity, but it's also like they, even in that movie, like they wear some of the same clothes that they wore when they were kids. It's like this very stunted existence because they used to be like the best at X, Y, and Z.
Well, and we've spoken on peaking before, but it would really suck to peak at 10.
for sure it would.
Or to perceive that you peaked at 10, because I don't think anyone actually does.
Right, right. I agree with you. Strong agree. In the movies, like, that depict these kind of narratives, like, the adults that are in them, since we're projecting ourselves onto the kids, right? Mm-hmm. The adults often stand in for, like, cautionary tales of, like, what could come, or, like, this juxtaposition. Mm. So, like, Matilda's parents suck.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, they're, like, the worst.
Right. But then you see Miss Honey, and, like, her life looks amazing. And she, like, had a mm-hmm. similar growing up experience to Matilda. So that's, like, the other option.
Right. And so they've got the juxtaposition. And then in the Magnolia, the quiz movie, with the kid, you see one of, like, the grown up kids who's, like, miserable. Oh, yeah. And, like, used to be smart, but isn't anymore. And he's kind of this cautionary tale of, like, what could happen if
when you're not special,
change things for, like, the protagonist.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Hmm.
But they kind of, like, these characters in fiction kind of stand in for, like, our own goals and also, like, our own inevitable disappointments.
Yeah, absolutely. You know? Yeah.
But I think, like, the cool thing is with all of these narratives about it, like, fictionally, mm-hmm. it kind of demystifies the idea of genius a little bit, in my opinion.
Oh, because yeah.
It links all these problems that, like, all of us have, that, like, whether you're, like, brilliant or not, like, the path to some sort of, like, satisfying adulthood is basically the same for all mm-hmm. of us, that we have to, like, find that emotional maturity, which is one of the things that you started calling out with this kid, yeah. of, like, Jacob in 60 Minutes, like, is he stunted? Is he not? You know, we have to do that. We have to face the past, whatever that looks like, and also appreciate that, like, life is not perfect, and, like, you have to, I don't know, like, find, like, in, like, a hokey way,
sure,
I guess.
Yeah,
like, you know,
that's fine.
To, like, find the positive things. And that's, everybody's doing that, no matter whether you're, like, a child savant or not, a wunderkind.
A wunderkind. So. And whether or not you're a wunderkind, it probably always helps your mentality to engage in the things that you like or care about.
Mm. Mm.
Something for everyone to enjoy.
Something for everyone to enjoy. Well, I guess in true Why Are You Like This fashion, like always, we have to pivot into a verbal game.
We sure do.
So, cue the vibraphone.
Cue it.
Well, we haven't done a true marry, fuck, kill in a long
forever.
Time.
Yeah, like one time this season.
Yeah, but I just was like, man, I would like to do a couple true marry, fuck, kills for you,
with
if
some,
I may.
With some child prodigy, or just general yes. prodigies?
I'm going to give you some prodigies.
All right.
I got two rounds I want to do for mm-hmm. you. And the first one, I would like you to marry, fuck, kill the following. Mm-mm-mm-mm. Matilda, Lisa Simpson, Margot Tenenbaum.
These are children.
I mean, Gwyneth Paltrow is like an older version, but like,
adult version. It's fine. And
the
they
adult
are
versions.
Ageless
they're grown.
Characters.
Yeah, they grow up though. They all of these stories, they all grow up. I mean, except for Lisa, but
that's true. Okay, so I think that I would maybe kill Margot Tenenbaum because I haven't seen that movie, and so I feel like the least bad about killing her. There's like no investment there.
Okay, heard.
Then who would I rather marry? Because I don't feel especially like aroused by like Lisa Simpson or Matilda.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like that would be like a, you know, yeah.
It's well, fine. Yeah. It's fine. I think that I would probably marry Lisa Simpson because I think that the in-law situation would be really so much fun.
Wow.
And also, like, I think in most of the flash forwards, like, she seems like a pretty cool ass adult, and like, she might be the president, and I don't know if I really would want to be married to the president, but
I wouldn't.
She's gonna be a very interesting adult. Matilda, I guess then I have to bang Matilda one time, and that'd be fine. She probably matured into a beautiful young lady. I don't know.
She's Miss Honey, basically.
If she turned into Miss Honey, then absolutely, that's my fuck choice.
Yeah, I feel like, I mean, that's the narrative. It's like Miss Honey is kind of the older Matilda.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah, Miss Honey looks pretty good. So that is my choice. And yeah, looking forward to Thanksgiving with my new family.
Oh, wow. I do also choose that I would marry Lisa, but I would fuck Margot Tenenbaum. Like,
I know you would. You wouldn't need to get in on that Gwyneth Paltrow.
I love Gwyneth Paltrow so much. It's disgusting.
Get yourself gooped up. Sorry to be graphic.
Goop me up. Sexual wine trips. You know the drill. And then I guess I have to kill Matilda. Sorry, Matilda.
In the chokey, probably. It's ready to go.
You know, what are we going to do about it? What are we going to do about it?
Who's the next stack?
All right, my next stack for you. Matt Damon's character from Good Will Hunting.
Oh, okay.
Doogie Howser. And our third option, Malcolm from Malcolm in the Middle. Let's give you Malcolm.
I will marry Malcolm in the Middle. Again, in-law situation, tumultuous, but I'm here for it. Also, I feel like Malcolm and I like would have a lot in common. I don't know. He's like very arrogant though, and like that would be hard sometimes, but like he might, he might grow out of that.
Yeah, that's a very, you know, it's a kid thing. Arrogance is lack of confidence, you know? It's a facade.
Wow, good point. Yeah, yeah. And then I guess Matt Damon, and who is my third choice? Oh, Doogie Howser.
Doogie Howser.
I absolutely kill Doogie Howser. Just, I like, I'm sorry. I find him like slightly annoying both as a child and as an adult. And I mean, he's fine. Like Neil Patrick Harris, like you're fine. I just don't always love your characters. And you know, sexually, I just, I would choose, Matt Damon. I'm not like attracted to him, but if I had to choose between the two, I would take the thicker choice.
Okay. I see you. Gosh, given these choices, I actually like kind of am like into all of these options, like on the low. Mm-hmm. I think though, I think I marry Doogie Howser.
All right. Like, all right.
I just, when I was a kid, I used to call him Howie Doozer, which my family thought was hilarious.
Oh, you got pastimes with it. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. We used to watch it, but also, like, I just want to shout out to the show Doogie Howser, because, like, the clickbait pull you in is a child savant doctor. Mm-hmm. But that show was, like, on the air at the same time as, like, Full House and, like, Growing Pains, mm-hmm. but actually talked about real shit. Like, there are episodes where they talk about racism. Like, it was just, like, it was ahead of its time versus some of, like, the other, like, situational comedies on the air. Right,
Saved by the Bell's doing caffeine pills as their PSA.
Well, somebody had to.
Somebody did.
I'm so excited. That said, so I think I'd marry Doogie Howser, and, like, shout out to Neil Patrick Harris. Like, shout out, you know?
Yeah, I like him fine as a person.
I think we would have a nice life together. You probably would. He's very funny.
Yeah.
And then I think I fuck Matt Damon's character from Good Will Hunting. Like, not Matt Damon, but specifically that character with, like, the Boston accent. Right. Like, all of it.
All of it.
Just be a journey. And, like, I love Malcolm, but I guess, like, given the circumstances, he dies.
Wow, his mom's gonna come for you.
Oh, Jane?
Yeah.
Woo.
Yeah. Oh. Lois.
I love her.
I do too.
I watched that video of her and that other woman like slamming each other's cars into each other at the supermarket all the time. Where they like door ding on accident and
it's
then they're
a
doing
good
it
one.
On purpose.
Yeah.
Oh God. Just like the pettiness.
She's an amazing actress. And the writing on that show was on point.
I just honestly, if anybody's looking to go back to a nostalgic binge at this time, might I suggest Malcolm in the Middle?
My top recommendation, actually, for a reminiscent binge.
I couldn't agree more. And if you have feelings about The Gifted class as a child,
seriously,
think you're a savant, know a savant, have a nostalgic binge like Malcolm that you should cue us in on, you can let us know, as always, via the internet at whyyoulikethispod@gmail.com, on Instagram at whyyoulikethispod, and via Twitter at WAYLTTweets. And we will see you next week.
We sure will. Good night, good day, goodbye, whenever. Have a good...
Toodles. General goodbye.
Yes, I said it all wrong. Bye.